This is an ABC podcast.
Corbin and Ben, Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. Eastern. Of course, you can catch up anytime in the podcast store under the Best of Grandstand folder. August the 2nd, round 20 of the AFL done. And boy, are we happy because tonight, first part of a two-part Australian story into three-time NBA champion Luke Longley. He's our feature guest today here on Corbin and Ben. We've got the voice of Goddard coming up with Brennan Goddard to pull apart all the footy. And of course, the Olympics continuing. We're 9 days into competition over in Tokyo. I'm Corbin Middlemass on the east coast of Australia. Out west is Ben Cameron. Hello, Ben.
What's up, Corb? Good to be back for this Monday afternoon. Very excited to speak to Luke Longley. As you know, I'm a Bulls fan.
Yes.
Very bravely at the start of last year. We were in Brooklyn.
We were.
On the Nets dime, to be fair, which is, this is probably a bit rude, but I bravely wore my Chicago Bulls outfit to watch the Bulls take on the Brooklyn Nets in BK.
And what happened?
They went down, unfortunately. They're not very good at the moment, but they were good. Corbin, if I can segue like an old-school radio journalist,
correct,
you'll make fun of me in a
moment.
Speaking
of when the Bulls were good.
Luke Longley was there, and we're going to chat to him about that as he features on Australian Story.
So a heap to get through. Just after the news at 6 for people listening live, we've got the National Rugby League on tonight, Ben. So there's two games to complete week 20, a hectic weekend. In the AFL, we had 5 games on Sunday for the first time ever. Well, in the NRL tonight, the round will come to a close. So they had no footy on Saturday, moved the 3 games to Sunday, and now the 2 Sunday games to Monday. So we've got the Bulldogs and the Titans first up, and then the late game is the Sharks and the Seagulls. So round 20 comes to a close tonight, which means, Ben, off the top of the show with top billing, our favourite segment every week, the voice of Goddard, with the former St Kilda and Essendon champion Brendan Goddard. He joins us straight off the top beach.
Top billing? You've had to push me aside for Luke. That's understandable, though.
Please. I like to think of it less as a curtain raiser and more of we just get straight to the good stuff off the top.
Yeah, no, I don't see it like that, mate. Let's not sugarcoat it.
I did see plenty of you across the weekend. We did 3 games together. I just want to throw you one sort of softball pitch, and you can hit it wherever you want to. What did we learn on the weekend? So across the 9 games, is there something that you sort of took out of it and thought, yep, that's changed my sort of big picture view on the game?
Well, I saw Gold Coast firsthand, we did, how bad their bad is. And it was shocking. We brought it up just about after quarter time. They actually looked pretty good, and Melbourne were just too good in the first quarter, which you can put your hand up and admit that. And then after that, I wonder where in that 10-minute space between the quarter time siren and then the start of the second quarter, where their actual minds just go. Because after quarter time, we just saw a different football team, didn't we? So it's a bit concerning for Stewie Jury, just inability just to, you know, four-quarter effort last week, dropping off the cliff after a great first half against Brisbane. And so that's six quarters. They've been putrid for 5 out of 8 quarters have been horrendous. So that was concerning. We found out yesterday how good a player Andrew Brayshaw is. And we just caught the back end of that game, unfortunately. We didn't get to see it, but in the dying seconds when there was 2 stoppages inside Richmond's forward 50, Brayshaw won both of them, and then looking at his overall game was outstanding. So he's had an outstanding year and progressing really well. And what I want to make mention too, that without the, which I don't, we don't know this for sure, do we? Correct me if I'm wrong, Benny, being over there in Perth, but Nat Fyfe and Sonny Walters, like, stepping aside, changing their role within the team. I think that Longmuir and the coach would have had a chat to him and said, we need to develop these kids and fast-track the development. It's going to benefit, you know, you. Well, it's going to, not really, in the short term, it's going to, I guess, hurt your ability to, you know, your performances, but in the long term, we're all going to be better off for it. Because Sonny could still be running around the midfield playing, you know, that kind of 60-40 role that he had done for previous years, and Nat Fyfe could be running around the midfield full time and arguably still be in contention for Brownlows, but they've stepped aside for the development of these kids. And what else?
West Coast?
West Coast, yeah, we did that game. That was abysmal. That was horrendous. Look at you. You two are so happy. West Coast. The Chooks are going terribly.
What's wrong with them?
I think they're done. I think they've been up for a long time, as have Richmond. They've been, as a whole club, they've been successful since their integration in the AFL in 1987, I think. Am I correct?
Yep.
They've been super successful. You know, the older players are just kind of run their race. They've done it the hard way, being Perth team, as we know, travelling pretty much every second week and having the success they've had. So they've got a couple of excuses, but I brought up the point with Corbin, Benny, just about where and what decisions they're going to make at the end of the year, because where do they see them at? And Corbin, you made mention of potentially some inside info about where they saw themselves that after this year was all in, chips are all in, let's have another crack. And then after this year, they see themselves from a list point of view in particular that they're potentially going to, you know, be a bit of a fade out and go back to the pack for a while. So I just raise the question, is it worth, you know, taking only a couple of steps backward and hover around that, you know, potentially that 12th to 8th position and potentially make finals and keep, you know, supporters reasonably happy in terms of this kind of rebuild and reset? Or is it just worth making really hard and tough decisions to do a proper rebuild and get the list in a position in 3 or 4 years to actually have a serious crack at not only one but multiple grand final premierships and you know, finals appearances? So I think they've got some pretty big decisions to make at the end of this year, and if not, definitely like the end of next year.
Beach, we're going to speak a lot about the top eight race and which teams are going to make it. But first I want to start with this. Corbyn's been running this idea, this campaign, that we should have a top 10 essentially. He wants a wild card game where 7th plays 10th and 8th plays 9th. Now let me ask you a question, Beach, just to set this up. St Kilda, Carlton, Richmond, Essendon, GWS, Freo, West Coast. How would you assess the seasons of those teams?
Who we start? St Kilda?
Yeah.
It's been a massive fail.
Carlton?
Fail.
Richmond?
Well.
Average?
Well, fail. They're excused, though.
Essendon, GWS.
Their injuries. Essendon, it's a success. I don't think we all saw them doing as well as what we thought.
But in terms of the competition, you'd say those teams are pretty average. One of those teams, West Coast, who we've just spoken about, have a winning record. The rest have losing records. Mm-hmm. And Corbin wants all of those teams to be in the finals race as we stand at the moment. They can't even make up their mind that they want to win now, Corbin, to try and qualify for the eight. And you want to gift them a position playing finals.
Well, if for positioning, if they end up in 10th spot, so what we get is an extra two finals. So you're essentially saying the top six clear from the rest of the pack. So under my system, what it would mean is the top six teams actually get the week off. They get the chance to load up for the finals and they have their own assault. And what we get is we get those other four teams based between 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th on the table. They can play one another. So they can try and earn it and you get to see them against a team against their station. It's not going to come down to who got to play Collingwood or Hawthorn twice and who had to play the Western Bulldogs twice or whatever. And then you get this shootout between those teams. We get two extra finals, so it's more entertaining. You get, and you essentially have a wild card playoff, and the winner of those games goes to play the big six who are still in the box seat to win the premiership. What's wrong with that?
You might be slow on the uptake here, Corbin, but we've already seen those teams play throughout the year. Mm-hmm. We don't need to see them play each other once again.
But what I'm saying is
the best six are there. We might as well just go with the top six. We don't need all the way down to 10th.
But the draws are uneven in the sense that some teams play each other twice, some don't. So what I'm saying is why not value add? All you can gain from it is an extra two blockbuster games that you don't currently have.
Beach, judge and juror, where do you stand on it?
Why? So you're saying that you take away the argument about teams playing each other twice, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So then why wouldn't you just play each other once and go down that path?
Yep, I'm a proponent of that as well. I'm a big fan of that.
And then alternate each, obviously, travelling, say, to Perth or whatever, you alternate each year that they come here, vice versa, which generally how it happens anyway.
Yeah, which is very much the NFL model, isn't it? They have conferences, so it is different, but you sort of work out, you essentially only play 17, 18 games and then they're into the playoffs.
Okay, Beach, the serious question though, who makes it? that eighth position and maybe Richmond. Even West Coast in seventh.
Still on Richmond.
You still think Richmond will make it? They've lost six of their last seven. You're still confident?
Well, their run home's the easiest, and I think they'll potentially scrape in, and then they just make up the numbers because it's too little too late. But unless, you know, they pull off another miracle, and but saying that, they're capable of actually winning that first final against the bottom, one of the bottom eight teams, which at this point, if it stays the same, is obviously Sydney. But I don't think they'll beat Sydney on current form, right? So it could be someone else if it's maybe even Port Adelaide. So that's why it's intriguing, yeah, because the top four as it stands play each other last round of the season, so there could be some jostling there of positions in the top two and all that kind of thing. Even obviously it's at this point in time, home ground advantage, well, there is no such thing. So it's still exciting. There's still a number of things that we need to see play out in that eighth position. Again, no one really wants it, so it could be anyone's in these last 3 weeks. So that makes it even more exciting. But I think based on what we see and who the last three games and who plays who, all that kind of thing, you know, I'd probably see Richmond just scraping in and then making up the numbers with West Coast at this point in time.
You were on Richmond as well. Ben, are you sticking with the Tigers for the last spot?
No. Well, I've been off them for a little while.
This time last week you said you were still on Richmond. You ran through their draw. Yeah, you were confident.
He's got a good memory, Benny.
I think what you'll find is that a little while. How long's a piece of string, Corbin? I was talking a few days since I watched it yesterday and called the game.
A week's a long time in football.
I think North will beat Richmond this week.
Oh,
there's one for you.
So North have been up for a while.
I think
they've been much improved, but
Tigers coming back from Perth. Who have you got there, Ben? Give me a team.
I think that Fremantle might make it now.
Beach, the big story of the week, really in a footy sense, all happened on Friday with Alistair Clarkson and Hawthorn announcing that they will part ways at the end of the season. There's so many angles to come at this from, but first of all, the way that it unfolded, what was your read on it all?
I think if you remember, and if I mentioned on this show, it just ties into my argument around how clubs continually stuff things like this up. The departure of now arguably the best coach we've seen in the last three decades, or however long you want to frame it and put it. Great players have been great servants to clubs, that they continually just get it wrong somehow. And I think it's through a lack of communication, you know, some porcupines and lies and people on boards. I think there's a number of things that happen, but it's just another, as Chris Fagan said, if anyone deserves to go out the right way, it's Alistair Clarkson, right? So not even Hawthorn, who's got a lot right and hasn't done much wrong over the 10-15 year period, they've completely stuffed this up, haven't you? So there's, like you said, there's heaps of different angles. I'm not sure who to believe, and being in footy club land, they obviously want to protect themselves. So I'm not sure if time, you know, will find out the truth. So what actually happened and how it went down and the rift between Sam and Clarko. And I believe now the players stood up and Benny McAvoy and the leadership group and said, something needs to happen because we can see this just isn't working now and it's not going to work, you know, next year and however long you think it's going to work for and till the end of next year. So, it's a bit unfortunate. And I think the victim in this a little bit too is Sam Mitchell. So he's painted, well, some people are painting him to be the villain in a sense, but I think it's at board level and Jeff Kennett's responsibility to get this right.
The power struggle's fascinating too at Hawthorn. So we've played this grab a few times on the ABC in recent weeks. This is going back a few weeks ago, I think before about round 13, the Hawthorn-Sydney game. Justin Reeves, the chief executive of the Hawks, was on Grandstand AFL speaking about the succession plan.
You know, our view as a Hawthorn Football Club, and not speaking for Collingwood, has been that there's never been an agreement or a curability agreement or the like, because we just don't think that that's the right thing for anyone.
So obviously that came up a bit after the announcement was made that Mitchell was going to take over, and all of a sudden we've got somewhat of a succession plan in inverted commas. So the analysis was, oh, they look like hypocrites. They said they weren't going to do it, and now they are. Well, Mick Malthouse was on with Ben on Sports Talk in Western Australia on Saturday morning, and perhaps made this a little bit more clear as to where Justin Reeves' position is on what took place at Hawthorn.
Just as an aside, I ran into Justin Reeves. I was having a coffee this morning. Ran into him. He uses the same cafe. And he said, he looked at me and just hunched his shoulders. He said, I've just got to keep wearing all these big hits. They're coming my way. He said, quite frankly, you know, he's a victim as much as anyone in this, because you can see that he would be overridden in almost every instance of what was taking place. He didn't say as much, but there's no doubt in my mind he didn't have to say too much for that to be said. So, look, this is just this is just fulfill the prophecy that these things don't work well. It's totally confusion, and that's the last thing you need at a football club, because there's so many moving parts.
So if you believe Mick, we've got Justin Reeves as a victim. Clarko's definitely a victim. Sam Mitchell is. It feels like the only guy who got his own way in all of this speech is Jeff Gannon.
is that hard to believe, though?
We know
a lot can change, right? So in the way I see it, kind of, and I didn't like read every article about it and everyone's opinions and whatever, but Clarko came out and made it very clear that he wanted to stay, and that's where his choice of words weren't by mistake. Mm. So it may be brought up and been mentioned that he lied to the public, lied to the supporters and members, but he made it clear that with his choice of words that he wanted to stay. Doesn't mean that he was going to, but he made it clear that he wanted to stay, and that if anything was to happen, it was kind of out of his hands, because he didn't want any blood on his hands, because I think he saw the writing on the wall, in a sense, and that's why he came out so strong and said, I want to be here and I want to see out my tender at the footy club until 2022. So if the goalposts had moved, he definitely didn't move him. Yeah, it's not on him, and there's no blood on his hands. And I think that's the way it happened. And I think he saw that writing on the wall. When was that interview? Like 2 weeks ago, I think, where he came out and said that I want to be here and all this kind of thing.
Two Fridays ago. What it does allow is it allows two things, doesn't it, Beach? Him to have a dignified exit, and it allows him to get paid, which is what is going to happen. Corbin, so you've touched on it there, but what are you saying with your theory as to what's happened here?
Oh, I feel like I don't think Reeves was hands-on in the entire process. So it feels like he's been – I don't necessarily think he was lying the first time around, that I don't think his succession plan was part of his plan. By the way, and we've argued about this before, Ben, I never thought this was a succession plan. This, and Sam Mitchell almost laid that out on radio too, where he came out and said, I was going for the Collingwood job. Hawthorn came to me and said, we're not going to reappoint Clarko. So that's the first thing that happened. So essentially they've sacked the greatest coach of the modern era. Then they came to Sam and they said, we want you to be our next coach from 2022 going forward, or 2023 going forward. And so essentially what happened is they were two separate things. Clarko's not going to continue. If you want the job, it's yours here at Hawthorn. You can't just call it a succession plan and pretend that everybody's on board and ready to transfer power over to the next coach. It felt like Hawthorn tried to dress it up retrospectively, but what they have at their football club is their new coach, who's currently an assistant, and their old coach, who they've just sacked. And as you touched on, Beja, it felt like that was never going to work.
I think if there's going to be a 12-month transition of power in which they're both at the club, it would qualify as a succession plan. The point that needs to be made... No, it's not happening now, but that was what initially was going to happen. The point that needs to be made, succession plans only work in one instance. When the person who is in the head role, whether that be as the senior coach at an AFL club or whether that be as the CEO of a major company like Amazon, and I know the Jeff Bezos example was used by Eddie Maguire, it only works when that person is the one who initiates the handover of power. When they are saying, I'm leaving at this point in time and I want the best prepared successor to take over, and this is how we're going to do it. That is the only time it works. When it's forced upon them, like at Essendon and like at Collingwood, it ends up as a schmozzle. And in 2008, Hawthorn won the flag with Clarko's cluster, and in 2021, we've had the Clarko cluster.
Beach, the...
So, and So to say that, the only time it really has worked at AFL level, you're pretty happy with that, aren't you?
Yeah. I've workshopped that all weekend.
Should we get a sound effect in there, like a boom, boom?
That it's involved Paul Roos on both occasions, has it? So arguably the John Longmire succession plan with Paul Roos and the Paul Roos transition and succession plan at Melbourne.
Yep.
Yeah,
and both times he was willing to go. He wanted to go.
Exactly. So yeah, so put his hand up and said, I can't remember exactly at Sydney, but you're saying with confidence that's what he did too. But we all know that Melbourne of recent times, that's exactly what happened. He's, I'm here for this period of time. One time only. There will be, do whatever you need to do, but I'm out at this particular time. I'll turn the footy club around, do my best to do it. And that's what happened. And that's the only time it has worked, because the name outside the three occasions now, Alistair Clarkson, Mick Malthouse, and the John Worsfold Essendon scenario. Has there been a succession plan?
So, yeah. It's an interesting case too with these clubs, and we spoke about this a bit with Collingwood, where their mantra was very much side by side. So that was how they market their whole footy club. And then they were side by side until they weren't, and then it was time to ship out a bunch of players essentially for the salary cap. So everything that they'd been preaching was undone in that moment. And Hawthorn very much market themselves, Beej, as we're the family club. And now all of a sudden they have this divorce where the guy who was the father head of the football club.
Which happens.
The figurehead. All of a sudden is shipped out. So I know there's a lot of unrest among their members. Just on the media aspect of this, and Caroline Wilson really bossed this story the whole way through. She was she knew that something was up at Hawthorn. She got shot down very hard from various people involved in the Hawthorn Footy Club, and it proved to be right. She was on the right scent on what was happening at Hawthorn. Fans sort of still continue to believe, Beej, that more often than not, that a journalist would be making up information rather than their football club telling myths, truths publicly to try and spin the narrative in their particular way. But it feels like both in the Collingwood situation and now here at Hawthorn, we've had some great examples in the last year or so of clubs' inability to try and control the narrative behind the scenes.
Yeah, which is hard because it's especially such big controversial topics, right? The sacking of a coach and in both occasions, premiership coaches. Or we're talking more in particular Collingwood Hawthorn scenarios. So, and there's always going to be talk. Someone's always going to say something, and for a journo to come out with such a strong opinion on such a big topic, you have to respect it in a sense. And that's what Caro did, because she said, I'm going to back my source in, and she trusts them. And came out and made a big statement. So,
I liked that about her. Yeah, you lived through the drug scandal at Essendon, obviously, which is a moment in time in the footy industry. But as a broad question, do you wish at times as a player, or did you ever think, damn, I wish our club was more transparent here on a particular issue, and that there was that the clubs were more upfront on where they sat on particular issues? Does it bother you as a player?
I haven't put much thought in it, but it's easy to think back to the drug saga at Essendon, and there was just so many moving parts and legalities and all this kind of stuff tied to that you literally couldn't say, I wish that the truth would come out, because and how the club was treated by multiple organisations and the one that is meant to be helping them, in the AFL. So and individuals at the time, how they were treated by different people and people in high places. So it would paint it, in my opinion, I'd confidently sit here and say it'll paint a better picture of Essendon, James Hurd, Bomber Thompson, if the truth would come out. So, but it never will it? Because someone will always deny it, and someone will always say it's someone selling porcupines and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I wish there was a bit more honesty. That's one thing I tried to do during that period, is to be as honest as I could with the media and tell them as much as I could without, losing the respect or disrespecting the players and the footy club. But there was just some things you just can't say just because for many reasons.
Well, next week we'll do the full expose and we'll get everyone on and get to the bottom of what happened with the Essendon drug saga.
Right here on the Corbin, Ben and Goddard show.
Correct.
You notice how I use Corbin's name first, Ben?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it is Corbin and Ben. And have you asked him why he went with Corbin and Ben?
Well, because he's the face of the show and he's in charge.
That's pretty much exactly what he said. But he said no one says no one says Scottie Pippen before Michael Jordan.
Correct. Beach, last one. Who should be in for Clarko? I guess if you were at another team in the competition or on a board, how far would you go to actually inquire about Alistair Clarkson's availability?
How far would you go? You'd be on the phone at an appropriate time. One of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the last 30 years. Footy's a ruthless industry, as we all know, and those that have been a part of it, as players, coaches, all that, footy admin staff and everything, it's a hard approach is taken on players in terms of making tough decisions. So a tough decision needs to be made on a coach that could be replaced with the best coach in the last 30 years. Why wouldn't you do that? Mm. It's just all under that concept of making your club better and giving your club the best chance for the ultimate success. We're in the business of winning and premierships. So make decisions accordingly.
Do you want to follow up on that?
We really haven't seen that, have we, outside of the Ross Lyon situation is the only one that comes to mind, mm-hmm. where Fremantle sort of ruthlessly went after the guy that they wanted. There was a great article on the ABC website talking about the longevity of coaches in the AFL, and out of all the professional sports worldwide, AFL coaches have the best longevity and job security out of any coaches. So, and it's probably brought on by, Mark Thompson's success and then Damien Hardwick, where they did the hard yards. It looked like they were going to get the sack and then they continued on and ultimately won a premiership. So we have this theory at the moment where you need to have an 8 to 10 year coach. But it's sort of very different from other sports where the tenure is obviously much, much shorter.
Yeah, but you look at it from a bigger picture, there's obviously less candidates and probably less qualified candidates to be senior coaches at AFL level when you're talking about countries with 330 million. And
as opposed to a lot of countries would produce a soccer coach, for example, or the population of America. Correct. Or the basketball coach.
You take that in consideration. So, there's not – and that's what you've got to consider. So a lot of the time is I think clubs get to a point, is he the right man? It's like, is the discussion's more around, is there someone better out there? There may be someone better out there, but is there someone out there that's better that's actually, we can get them kind of thing, and they're free and willing to come across. That's the argument. And a lot of the time there isn't. So hence why probably a lot of guys, get a second chance. And I'm not against second chances at all, but it's just if they can replace them with someone better, why wouldn't you look down that avenue? But I think a lot of the time there just isn't. That is, we're not spoiled for choice by guys being qualified or wanting to be AFL senior coaches because it is a tough gig. It's stressful. It's obviously been brought up in more recent times in the last year and a half with the mental toll it takes of being an AFL coach and the impact on your personal life. We've seen that in the last couple of years, haven't we? So it's a tough gig, and at the minute it's not very appealing. For many people.
Beej, appreciate your time. As always, we'll catch up again on the weekend. We'll hear you on Grandstand AFL and, of course, next week here on Corbin and Ben and Goddard.
Thanks, boys.
Brendan Goddard with us here on Corbin and Ben, ABC Sport across the country.
I was just going to say to BJ Corbin, but I can just as easily present it to you, is that the theory of this being a Jeff Kennett ego play, the eagerness to appoint the next successful coach at Hawthorn. The appointment of Alistair Clarkson, very successful, four premierships, to be the guy who finds the next guy and identifies him. That will always be next to Jeff Kennett's name. It reminds me a little bit of Bill Belichick in the US, Corbin. He wanted to replace Tom Brady with Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy G, I believe, and the general consensus, so that he could prove he could win with someone else, and it was Bill Belichick's team and not Tom Brady's team. Now, that's been flipped on its head because Tom's left and Tom's won elsewhere. Maybe Belichick will win again. Yeah, correct. Mm. But what do you think about that theory? Is that what we've seen with Jeff Kennett?
Well, I think, as I sort of outlined there with Beej, I think one person got their way out of the four key players. Didn't sound like it was the CEO. If you believe Mick, it didn't sound like, it happened on Clarkson's terms, and even Sam Mitchell, it makes the job tough for him, doesn't it? Yeah. Comes in and replaces the greatest coach of our time.
He got what he want, but not how he wanted it, didn't he?
I'm not sure that's the way you want to take over. Luke Longley's about to join us, Ben, the national Rugby league is on tonight, round 20, two games, Bulldogs, Titans, followed by Sharks, Seagulls. So the first one at 6 Eastern, and then Cronulla and Manly just after 8 o'clock. You can hear it all here on ABC Sport Digital tonight. The reason we have Luke Longley, Ben, he's the subject of Australian Story over the next two Monday nights on the ABC. You can, of course, see it on ABC TV tonight, or you can catch up anytime in iView, on iView. Here's a little taste of what you're going
to
see.
He was very adept at what he needed to do to be part of the team. He was a pass-first guy, which was important.
Here's the give-and-go, Longley to Harper. It's beautiful.
Right away, everybody on the team really enjoyed playing with him and getting to know him.
Me and Luke really bonded. He's a bit of a joker, so me and him was able to hit it right off.
I knew he was capable. We all felt he was capable. But you have to be capable every single night for us to maintain success. So I pushed him. Obviously, I did.
Luke Longley to join us next. This is Corbin and Ben, ABC Sport.
In winter, mutton birds are flying to America like we can't. But we can snuggle in for a winter binge with Spicks and Specs on ABC iView.
You're right, miss? Yes, I'm right.
No, I'm just excited.
Or Wakefield, or Love on the Spectrum, or Fisk, or Superwog.
I have way more where that came from.
Don't be surprised by all the jaw-dropping comedy, eye-popping drama, and mind-blowing television.
There's more?
There's more.
Yes. Stream for free now on ABC iView.
How you like me now, me now, me now.
Corbin and Ben, ABC Sport, ahead of Australian Story tonight and over the next two Monday nights, one of our greatest ever basketball exports. Three-time NBA champion Luke Longley joins us on Corbin and Ben across the country. Luke, appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. It's a big day for me, so I'm excited to share it.
The subject of Australian Story, two parts over the next two Monday nights, and of course you can catch up anytime on iView. There was a lot of talk, obviously, around the release of The Last Dance, and I'm sure you would have got millions of phone calls as to why you don't tell your story or to come out and speak to the media about that. Why have you decided to do it in this way on Australian Story?
Well, first of all, I suppose the reason I didn't talk at the time was, A, I hadn't seen the thing when people wanted to hear from me. I needed to see the thing first. And then I suppose afterwards I was just, I didn't really know what to say. I was pretty disappointed and decided to try to tell it in my own way and on my own terms. And I looked around and I suppose my most trusted platform is the ABC. And so when the Australian Story opportunity came up, I jumped at it, and it's been a really fun process. I don't get to see it, by the way. I'll be seeing it at the same time as you guys tonight. That's the contract that you, the unwritten contract that you sign when you agree to do Australian Story. I guess it protects the integrity of the journalism. So I don't know what MJ has said. I don't know what Pip said. I know, and I've seen bits and pieces in the teasers, but only the same things that you guys have. Really important to me, I guess, to after watching the Last Dance and being disappointed, I had to think about why I was disappointed. And genuinely, it wasn't about as much about me as I was disappointed at Australian kids watching that doco. There was no mention of Australia, of an Australian in that team and of what he did in his role. And I suppose that spiked my pride. I guess I realised that I was very proud of it and a little bit annoyed that piece of legacy was getting left behind. So this is my answer to that, and I hope it does a good job.
We'll extrapolate on that in just a moment. But how many calls did you actually get, Luke, during that particular time? I know Ben and I would have been blowing up your phone along with every other broadcaster in Australia. Did you have to change your phone number? What did you do to try and stop people ringing?
Yeah. So I would take every call in Australia, no problem. But what happened is that the international journalists started calling at all hours of the night and people I'd never heard of, and somehow my number must have been shared on a platform somewhere. So I've got someone from Japan and someone from, oh mate, you name it. I had someone from, you know, Greece one day, Canada the next day. It just went on and on for three or four nights, and I obviously turned my phone off, but I realised that my number was just being thrown around, and so I changed it. I mean, I didn't know what else to do. I don't think there is an option. I've had that number for a long time, so I've had that number since, I think, I don't know, when mobile phones came out, whenever that was. So would have been nice to keep the number, but I didn't have any option. Obviously, it just took me a little while to figure out how to say and what to say. And really, with the Australian Story thing, everyone else says it for you, which is the best way to have it done, in my opinion.
Luke, Ben Cameron here. Appreciate your time. We covered The Last Dance on this very show like it was a sporting event because there was no sport on due to COVID. We had Sam Smith, the beat writer. We had Roland Lazenby. We even tried to hit up D-Rob the Worm, Dennis Rodman, to get him to join us. But we haven't got onto him just yet. But you mentioned that there were parts of the...
I can tell you where he is.
Where is he?
He's in Mexico filming a reality TV show. We're actually... think that he's doing his interview for the second part of my story. Ooh. Right now, literally as we speak. But with Dennis, you never really know because he never really knows. And how can you know? He doesn't really know.
Yeah, well, that's true. We got onto his voicemail. I share his birthday, but he hasn't got back to me yet. I thought that might be enough of a similarity. But you mentioned there were parts of the docuseries that disappointed you. What did you mean by that?
The obvious one was my omission. And probably the admission broadly of guys like Ron Harper, who was also started and had a major role, and that whole chemistry in the group that that everyone participated in. But I'm really not here to focus on the failings of it. I guess I'm here to try to fill in the gaps that I can. But, you know, you can't help but be disappointed when you watch a documentary about a team you played on for 5 years and won 3 world championships and you're a background piece like that, and some of the guys that were background pieces at the time come into the foreground and tell a story. And I guess that was as simple as that for me. It was just a little bit of competitive pride there, I suppose.
Luke, what's the question that you get asked the most? I imagine just about every single person you come across would say, "What's MJ like?" How many times in your life do you get asked that question?
Yeah, I wish I had a dollar. I probably do have a dollar, but wish I had a dollar for every time that got asked. What was it like to play with MJ? How tall are you is probably wins. Any kid under 10 asks how tall you are, and any kid under about 4 asks how old I am, because the kids think you're like a tree, right? Mum and dad have been saying, when you get older, you'll get bigger, you know, and the kids look at you and go, "Whoa, you must be really old."
And you could be any age from...
the second one.
And kids think you're any age from 15 to 100. It sort of doesn't mean anything to them as to someone that's that tall.
That's right. 500 probably in their imaginations.
Luke, there's a really interesting quote from you in some of the teasers about, I think what you're alluding to, the fact that you're a very laid-back guy and the fact that you've had to unlearn some of what they made you become, and in many respects you're still unlearning that now. With the passage of time, how do you look back on that now as we move forward?
Yeah, so they didn't really make me become it. I mean, I wanted to become it. I needed those examples to follow. It wasn't naturally set up with the same level of intensity and day-to-day rigor that MJ was. So I had to learn that, and that's took a long time, obviously. I had a bit of it, obviously. I didn't get to the NBA totally by accident, but getting to that championship level where you are out there every single night performing to MJ standards, and in the end, all of our standards, that takes having a really hard look at yourself and beating yourself into a shape that fits the key that fits the hole, so to speak. So for me, it was about, first of all, it's physicality, about fixing my body, getting my body to a point where it could do that every night, and probably more importantly, the appetite for competition. I suppose that's a little bit addictive. You win a couple, you want to do it again. You see teams fold beneath you as you roll onto the court, and you like that feeling. It was really an evolving sort of addiction for me. Then when you retire, and I retired with a busted ankle, and very suddenly, or not very suddenly, the retirement was sudden, the ankle wasn't. Those appetites still linger, and there's also that nature where to be very good at sport, and I imagine many things, you have to be super self-critical, and the coaches have to be critical, and that's the nature of the game, and that's how it works. But when you don't have sport to point that at, understanding that it's time to put that down, if you want to call it a weapon, you can't use that weapon in civilian society, it's not healthy. And I didn't prepare myself for that, and it took quite a while. And I guess to a certain extent, some of those personality traits and some of those appetites from those days sort of still hang around. You don't completely unchange, and I wouldn't change any of it. But it's just been interesting to me how permanent that stuff, how indelible it becomes in your personality, and certainly having ingratiated myself to everyone along the way as a result.
It feels like that ruthlessness it's almost been justified by the sporting world, Luke, more broadly, because it was successful. So it was, you know, we have to do that because we had to succeed and win that way. Do you ever look back on it and think, we could have won a different way? We didn't necessarily have to be exactly like that and the standards that Michael drove. Do you ever look back and think there were other ways to win?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you're going to go with the examples. So certainly there are other ways. I know other teams that have done it differently, and you know, one of my teammates, Steve Kerr, said, and I think he said it well, he said when he played with Tim Duncan and those guys, you felt like you were playing with them. And when you played for the Bulls, you felt with Michael, you felt like you were playing for him. And there is a bit of that. But I wouldn't do it any different. Like that's how it worked for us. And I do think, though, that having people like me on the team, that was conscious effort by Phil Jackson and by Jerry Krause to counterbalance some of Michael's intensity. Like if it was 12 of us like Michael, I think we would have eaten each other alive. You know, we wouldn't have got out of the gym with all of our limbs. You know, it wouldn't have worked. So it took a balance of characters, and you know, that's the subtle magic in sport, isn't it? Is finding the way to get a bunch of people to sort of relate for a long period of time and chew on the same bone. And Phil managed to do that. And so, yes, there's other ways to do it, but we did it that way, and I don't regret it, and I wouldn't change it, and I got three big, shiny, gaudy, ugly rings to show for it.
And you've got them back now, haven't you? Because I actually texted you a couple of years ago, Luke, when I think you'd misplaced them. You'd donated them to a Hall of Fame, which was the AIS, I believe, and you couldn't remember where.
Yeah, I lost track of them. I knew that I'd gone to a museum, but I just could not remember, and I couldn't find any record of which museum. I didn't try they were lost anywhere else other than in my own memory. And so, yeah, I put it out there. Well, one of the Sydney journalists put it out there and they've called the next day, and now I know where they are. In fact, I have them home now, which is nice. I'm glad to have them around. You can't wear them. Unless you're Liberace, you can't possibly wear them.
There's a few people who do those sorts of things. A name you mentioned there, Jerry Krause. Now, I was kind of upset watching The Last Dance as to how he was portrayed, and I think given Jerry Reinsdorf was able to feature in it, it was obviously from Michael's perspective. We know the relationship that pair had. Jerry was able to build two iterations of a championship-winning team with the two three-peats. How did you feel watching the way he was sometimes portrayed?
Well, what I will say is, first of all, you know, Jerry's dead, so it's hard for him to really defend himself. But I will defend him in terms of my own experience. He, you know, my personal experience. Obviously, I can't talk about MJ and Scotty's experiences with him, and I understand they had frustrations. But Jerry recruited me from banging around the NBA, not really having a home, not really sure if I fit. Put me in a situation to succeed, and then gave me a very fair contract. And I always felt very, very grateful to Jerry for doing that, and to Phil, you know. And Phil and Jerry didn't necessarily see eye to eye in the end either, but I always had a lot of respect for Jerry and what he'd done. In fact, both the Jerrys. And I know they're much maligned, and business and sport are a tough marriage, man. And, you know, Australia's going to find that out more and more over the next decade as the codes here adopt more free agency and more player rights, if you like. But it's a tough world, and we work with sort of loyalty and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, it's a business. And so I suppose Jerry got the thick end of that stick, so to speak. But I certainly am grateful to him post-mortem for he made my career in many ways, and so I appreciate that, Jerry, listening.
Do you have reunions, Luke? Do you get the chance to get together with the championship teams? Obviously, there's a small thing with the pandemic at the moment, but outside of the pandemic, do you get back together as the championship teams?
We haven't, you know, and I don't know exactly know why. It's not really a thing. American sport is a little bit different. It's a little bit more mercenary. I think our particular team, I mean, which particular championship does MJ, you know, if MJ gets together with all his championship teams, he's busy like all summer, you know, like it's a, that's a lot of work for MJ. I think we will at some stage, and I hope we will. I know that Phil would be keen. If Phil's getting older now, and I know that he'd be keen. So one of these days I'll make a push for it, and but we haven't done it, no. But, I mean, I speak to most of those guys. I speak to MJ now more than I did when we were playing together. I speak to Phil and Steve Kerr a lot, Scottie Pippen a little bit. I tried to get Scottie down here recently. He was keen, but then, as you mentioned, the pandemic sort of slowed that down. But, you know, it's something that, when you win three championships, you've got lifelong friendships and they won't go away.
Last one from me, Luke. You mentioned sports down here in Australia and what's to come as the population grows and, you know, the business side of sport continues to take over. Our national league here, the NBL, so but the NBA is more accessible than ever with cord cutting. You can watch, you know, any game, any time with the league pass. So it's not so much that basketball's not strong here, but our own domestic league seems to still very much be a niche sport. If you had any advice for the NBL and the WNBL as to how they can cross over a little bit more into the mainstream so it's not just basketball diehards, what would your advice be to them?
Well, that's a good question, mate, and I guess I haven't prepared for that question at all. Free-to-air television would be good. That'd be a really good start. Just thinking off the cuff, I'll probably be more careful than to wrap something off the cuff. But that's a good point. I mean, I think what keeping the players accessible is the thing that the NBA hasn't done as much, and that the NBL has to offer, and why kids still like going to the NBL. Although COVID's changed that as well, but you know the players are real for them. They can see them, and if not touch them, they can be around them. So, I think that's an asset for the NBL, and we've got lots of good locally grown product. Continue to invest in the local product. Continue to invest in the referees because the referees make the game. They're undervalued and super important. That's my off the cuff stuff. Nothing brilliant there, but there you go.
Just as we let you go, Luke, how many muscle cars do you have at the moment?
You know what? I sold all but one because I live on a kilometre of gravel road in the middle of nowhere in the bush. So muscle cars and gravel roads aren't a great mix, and the paint jobs or the traction. So I'm down to one, and I'm happy. It's actually the first one I ever bought. It's in a 65 Ford Galaxy, the Australian one. Andrew Bogut's the one. He's got the crazy car collection. I'm not even allowed in. You have to have a certain number of cars to be allowed into his club.
I think that little gravel road is certainly located in a little part of heaven down in the southwest of Western Australia. Luke, appreciate your time. We can't wait to watch the Australian story, the two parts of it, over the next couple of Monday nights. Thanks for coming on and having a chat to us here on ABC Sport on Corbin and Ben.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. Great questions, and I'll speak to you again soon, I hope.
Luke Longley, the subject of Australian Story over the next two Monday nights. And, of course, you can see that this evening or catch up on iView at any time.
We'll just play that bit at the end back to him, hey, Corbin.
Yes.
Great questions. Yeah, I look forward to speaking to you guys again soon, I hope.
Put that on the promo and we'll hold him to that. Absolutely.
Thank you, Luke.
Great to have Luke Longley with us. This is what you'll see tonight.
Luke is an accidental superstar.
I wouldn't have been anywhere near the NBA if I hadn't been 7'2".
An Aussie on the world's greatest team.
We went through the trenches. We shared a lot.
I liked his game. I liked his size.
Me and him was able to hit it right off.
Basketball's given me an awful lot, and it's also cost me a fair bit.
Michael rode him a lot.
I wanted to be what they wanted me to be.
You had to show him a little tough love.
Luke Longley reveals all.
I had a change of who I was, and I'm still unlearning it.
Australian Story exclusive, Monday on ABC and streaming on iView.
A story which has raised my eyebrows, Ben, and just broken while we were on air with Luke moments ago. Nick Del Santo has been appointed as the new senior coach of the St Kilda AFLW team.
Why does it raise your eyebrows, Corbin?
What's his
credentials?
So essentially he's done some part-time coaching. He hasn't coached his own team anywhere. We haven't got a one woman coaching in the AFLW. The 14 clubs, they sacked the last remaining woman to be a coach, which was Peter Searle. And they've gone and appointed Nick Del Santo, who's a lovely guy, and I wish him nothing but the best. But if I was a well-credentialed woman and I'd been coaching for many years and I can't get a job in the AFLW, I'd be starting to think, gee, how do you win that process?
Yeah, I don't have a whole heap to add to that, Corbin, other than your point's very well made.
It's a conversation that absolutely should be had. It's not about Nick, by the way. Good luck to Nick in the role. And if he's won the job, that's fine. But St Kilda need to come out and explain exactly what went on there. The rugby league is on tonight, the first of two games starting just after us at 6 o'clock. So it's the Bulldogs and the Titans. Our commentary team, Brett Sprigg, Dean Halitau, Ruan Sims, and Brad Tallon is on the sideline. And then, of course, later it's the Sharks and the Seagulls, and Andrew Moore will be along for that. You can hear it all tonight on ABC Sport Digital.
Judging by history, they're overrated at this particular time. Yeah, very overrated. Yeah, very overrated. Oh, underrated.
Underrated.
Yeah. Oh, that's underrated. That's awesome.
All right, Corbin, some serious, some a little more lighthearted. Overrated or underrated? Sharing a gold medal like Gianmarco Tamberi and Mutaz Esabashim in the high jump last night.
Slightly underrated.
Underrated?
Yeah.
And can you stop saying slightly? It's either overrated or underrated.
Underrated.
Why is it underrated?
So if I'm them, if you're asking me if I'm them, I get it. It's good.
I wasn't asking you if you're them. I was asking...
Well, it's good game theory in the sense that you don't have to compete. You're guaranteed a gold medal anyway. What are you actually losing? You're risking silver.
Yeah.
But as a sporting event, we want a playoff there, don't we? We want one winner.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the argument that it's good sportsmanship is null and void, because sportsmanship exists when there's a winner and a loser. It's the way you behave in the triumph of victory or the disappointment of defeat. It's not sharing it. Anyway.
And it means you're often willing to sacrifice victory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which they didn't do.
A bloke dressed up as a wicket keeper with his gloves on and his full cricket kit for the birth of his child, acting like he's catching the baby in his wicket keeping gloves. Overrated or underrated?
Overrated.
Yep.
Some moments are just, you don't need to put them all over the internet, Ben. You can't tell me that he thought this was going to be a really good idea and make great content online, and shows like us would be talking about it, but I'm a hard no. Just go along with the birth. It's not about you. Just lend a hand. Be supportive. Yep.
I'm the same. So Alex sent me this and said, oh, this would be you. I said, it definitely wouldn't.
No.
I hope he's not a listener of Corbin and Ben.
I was going to say, do you sound like a sad sack, don't I? Just fun, but no.
But no, we loved it, mate, if you're a listener of Corbin and Ben. George Bailey's appointment as the new chairman of selectors.
Underrated. Mm. Big George Bailey fan. Has played all three formats of the game. Really nice appointment at a good time, and well done to Trevor Holmes for a long stint, but I felt like the time was right.
You're an Ed Cowan guy, and you wouldn't dare go against Ed, so
of course,
he's
they're good
a
mates.
Big fan of George Bailey. Oh, don't act like it was a surprise. You knew that.
I haven't had much to do with George at all.
Frio's retro round jumper, overrated or underrated?
Underrated. Put a tweet out about this last night, Ben. 9.5 out of 10. Mm. Just missed the socks. We had the old home socks with the away jumper. Socks needed to be predominantly green, and as I pointed out to you when we spoke off air, they're actually freshly made too. They've got the new
sponsor
on them, so which are fresh this year. So it's not as if they just had them as a carryover thing, and they produced those. Why couldn't they make some green ones?
Yep, they got that wrong. But all in all, it was very, very good. Max Homer's idea that the winning caddies should also get a medal in the Olympic golf. Overrated or underrated?
Overrated. The caddies should get a big thank you, and that's about it.
Well, normally they get a percentage of the check, Corbin. They get 10%, but there's no check at the Olympics.
Take 10% of the medal.
Well, maybe they should get a smaller medal, like a coin. Rowan Browning's mullet, overrated or underrated?
Overrated.
Overrated.
Well, in the sense that, like, Rowan Browning's going to break a lot of hearts. He's a good-looking dude. He can sort of do whatever he wants. He's got the whole world at his feet. He doesn't need to be worried about a mullet. It's a novelty. It's for people that aren't very good-looking, Ben. He's a sprinter. He runs 100 metres incredibly fast. We're back on Thursday from 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Time.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.